this is our spiritual practice, and this is the best place to practice it in. We are here, welcoming whatever form arises, inner as an emotion, a feeling, or outer form, because it is, it already is. You say yes to that. You are no longer in a personalized relationship to whatever arises. You embrace what arises through that yes. It is. Embrace. And what happens when you embrace the form of this moment? You become who you already are. You become, and I'm only using pointers, the pointers are not it, words. You become who you already are and what you already are. You become very deep and spacious as you allow the world of form to arise and to subside in that field of now. There's a great sense of spaciousness now around this form that arises, this event, this person, this thing. It is not resisted. And suddenly, one could also say, there is suddenly a vast peace around it, no matter what it is. The form itself may not be peaceful. The form itself may be a limitation on your physical form. It may even be a limitation on your psychological form of me. But it is allowed to be. The limitation is not resisted. Let's say you are trapped in a cold room. And it's just a simple example. And that form that this moment takes, which is while the body feels, is simply allowed to be. Any condition is simply allowed to be. And suddenly, there's a vast space around the condition. Anything that is, you can practice that with anything that is uncomfortable in your life, and there may be things here because you will probably be more comfortable at home. And sometimes you may wish you were at home in your comfortable armchair watching television, having your favorite drink, a meal, and all this is gone here. And suddenly, there's a limitation, there is a discomfort that arises somewhere. There may even be pain, but let's just talk about a little thing like a discomfort that arises. And so you can react, so the discomfort becomes a reaction, which leads to mind movements, which strengthens the me, because the me has now has made the moment, the now, into its enemy, and it gets stronger through that, through the mind movement and the emotional movement that makes the now into its enemy, and you can complain about it in your head. Why did I ever come here? I shouldn't. They shouldn't. Why don't they? So the discomfort, reacted against, is denied, resisted, and mind movement begins. Emotions that accompany that mind movement flow into and strengthen those mind movements, and it's all connected. Your sense of self gets stronger in that. And you're complaining inside your head, and maybe to somebody else. I'm not saying you can't complain in the sense of telling somebody to change this from here, to do that, but I mean the psychological complaining. And many people live in a constant state of that. There are marriages, people living, husbands and wives, were in a constant state of mental complaining about their husband or their wife. It's so normal, they don't even know it anymore. For 30 years they've been complaining in the head. It's their normal state. But it's with everybody, it's like that. It may not be in your marriage, may not be like that, but some are, quite a few are. So a discomfort arises, and instead of the reactivity strengthening the egoic entity that needs its enemies to feel I'm me, if only the enemy is this little situation that creates discomfort, that will do, any enemy will do, to strengthen this, the self, the me. And of course, when you complain, you are right, and the situation is wrong. That is the essence of the complaint, the inner complaint. I am right. Either the person, or it may not be a person, the situation is wrong. That's the nature of complaining. You're putting yourself in a position of rightness, me right, a mental position. You are then, your sense of self becomes identified with that mental position of rightness, and therefore you're under the delusion, it's all unconscious, that you are more yourself now. It feels great, I'm against something. And it's unconscious, people don't know that this is how the self, the false self, perpetuates itself. How it loves all the things it complains about. It needs them. So it just, it's looking out for the next thing it can complain about. Right. And then what happens then if suddenly there's a shift, the discomfort arises, whatever it may be, and is met in that state of yes. It's allowed to be. The discomfort is there and is allowed to be. And you actually, you embrace it. That's all right. And that continues as a little movement, the discomfort movement, cold, a little pain here, whatever it may be, pain there. Water is cold, what? Who knows? And it's allowed, and there the discomfort continues. And sudden, and it's and you continue to simply be with it. And suddenly, there is something more than that, or that little me. Then what I cannot, what happens now is not something that one can put into words, because you go beyond form now. There is a space around the discomfort. And you can do that with any bodily condition, any physical condition. Just stay with that. And suddenly there's a sense of spaciousness around it. And that is an enormous peace around that. And the discomfort is still there. So the discomfort is any form of pain, suffering. It's, you're simply allowing it to be as it is. Allowing it to be as it is. So use... This is great that we have some discomforts here. Theoretically, one could have a retreat center that is so comfortable, everything works totally perfectly to satisfy all your needs, just the right temperature, the thermostat works perfectly, the water is just right, the environment is totally soothing and peaceful, you get a massage 3 times a day. The most exquisite food, just the right amount, some celestial music in the background sometimes. Maybe one day, and it may be in California, they may create such a center. Wow, wouldn't that be great? And yet, there wouldn't be very much spiritual practice there. It doesn't come in that way. Here you have the natural things that arise in an environment that to many of you is foreign and strange, and many things arise here. In others, there are schools like Zen monasteries where they consciously make your life as uncomfortable as possible. Where you get very little food, it's cold, they open the windows and you meditate all night in this painful position, facing a wall with cold wind blowing in and an empty stomach. And then you can watch what arises in the now. And it may perhaps at one point you give up real resistance because you can't stand the pain of the resistance anymore. And you enter the state of surrender because you cannot live with that pain anymore, that ultimately is not in the discomfort and cold. The pain arises out of the resistance to it. And suddenly you cannot live with that. It's just too much. And you enter the surrendered state. And it's still cold. The stomach is still empty. The body, you're still sitting in the painful position facing a wall. And yet, suddenly, there is more to it than the form of this moment. You're suddenly aware of a vast space around this temporary form that includes the physical body. And that is, some people have described it as enormous peace suddenly around. In the same awful place, the monastery, whatever it was, that. And there, in the midst of that spaciousness, there's the physical pain, there's the empty stomach, there's the discomfort. It's there somewhere, it's not a self anymore, there is that discomfort, there is that feeling of empty stomach, and yet there's no me in it, it's just there. So your sense of self is no longer in the form, the psychological form or the physical form. Your sense of self, where is, in some traditions they now say you have discovered no self. The self has dissolved, which is true. The false self has dissolved through entering the surrendered state. The false self has dissolved. And what arises then is, Buddhists may call it emptiness, or it may be called the self, the one, the unconditioned one consciousness, out of which the whole universe comes, out of which every phenomenon comes, that is remains, and there it is, not known in a subject-object relationship, known as yourself. Not that which arises, but the field in which everything arises is who you are. You are not that which happens in the now. You are the field of now. That's the depth of what now means, the eternal. Now is the eternal, unchanging one. And it's so easy to know that as the essence of who you are, and you can see how absurd it is to look for it in the future. The essence, eternal presence, the essence of who you are, to look for it in the future. So that's why this spiritual practice does not require time. And yet, and there's always a paradox whenever we speak about it, because all language is to do with time and the phenomenal world. And yet, we are here for 1 week, which is time. A whole week exploring that which is beyond time. Sounds paradoxical almost. Why do we need a whole week to explore the timeless? Well, maybe you don't need it anymore. Maybe it's once or twice it's happened that people have walked out and later contacted me and said, I'm the person who walked out after 10 minutes of your talk because I realized the truth of it and I don't need to come anymore. That realization, of course, may be true or false. If it's only a mind movement, life will soon tell you that, oh, this is not the surrendered state. I'm shouting and screaming at my wife. Is that the surrendered state? So, our practice then is allowing this moment to be simple. The rest happens by itself. And there is enormous intelligence in this field of now. It is the essence of all intelligence. The mind is a tiny aspect of that vast intelligence that is in the field of now. And one more pointer. As you surrender to now, whatever form this now takes, the incessant mental noise that we call thinking, 90% of which is unnecessary, slows down. Because a large part of the compulsive streams of thinking that most people are identified with as me, as themselves, completely identified with those continuous streams of thoughts. And the reason why those thought streams have an addictive quality, a compulsive quality, it's because your sense of self is in them, a me, your identification with those thought streams as a me. And the me wants to sustain itself, so it can't stop. And the me can only perpetuate itself through non-surrender and resistance, and that gives fuel to the compulsion to think, because it's an expression of the non-surrendered state. You're trying to control things somehow. And so you lie awake at night for 2 or 3 hours trying to work it out, control your life, fear what might come, rehearse something, project fantasies. With entering this surrendered state, the mental noise slows down by itself. When you say yes to what is, mental noise will begin to subside. Still there to some extent, but you're not in a fighting mode anymore towards the universe. And it's to be in a fighting mode towards the universe is what creates that enormous momentum that is behind compulsive thinking. It comes in waves and waves and waves. And there's always a me in it. And so with the surrendered state, that calms down. So you don't need to stop your mind. That creates another problem. Just be with what is. Allow this moment to be. Then the mind stops by itself. Because it's not compatible, compulsive thinking, with allowing this moment to be. And when the mind subsides, that continuous stream of thinking, there's the spaciousness. There's the stillness that is underneath the mental noise in everyone. It's already there. And that is none other than that spaciousness that is there beyond the form that this moment takes. And that stillness, again, every label is so limited. Every signpost is limited. Stillness, spaciousness, awareness that does not need thought, beyond thought. Thought can arise in it, but it is beyond thought. Vast intelligence, unconditioned. What humans think of as intelligence is the ability of the mind to solve puzzles, to store knowledge, to analyze information. It's very limited. The entire universe is an external expression, in the manifested expression of vast intelligence, expressing itself as form, and most of it comes out of stillness. The flowers come out of stillness, exists in stillness, that beauty that no mind could create. Entire galaxies coming out of vast stillness. They say the universe came about, scientists say there was a big bang when the universe out of one point suddenly exploded into existence. And then they ask, what was before then? And then their mind stops. Well, it doesn't stop, but thought cannot reach there. What was there before the universe was there, before the Big Bang? That state of the unmanifested is still in you. It's never gone away as your essence. The Big Bang happens continuously. The universe comes into existence every moment. Don't think about that. Ultimately, this is now that there's a strong evolutionary impulse now on this planet that is forcing humanity to evolve into a state that before was the privilege of very few individuals here and there. They were the early flowerings of consciousness. But it is the destiny of all humans to be, to express this flowering, to be openings for this flowering of consciousness to happen. So where the person, you come here as a person, which is the caterpillar, and then, but you're already ready to go beyond that. Then the person was there, and it's become dense and heavy in its last stages of personal selfhood. And then the person gives way, just as the caterpillar dissolves as caterpillar, and out comes this incredible, beautiful being. The person gives way to the flowering of human consciousness. Yes, you're still here in a physical form, but something far greater has emerged through this form. And this is why we are here, to go beyond this absurdly limited sense of self, with me, with my little bit of past and my little bit of history, my little story, and a pathetic little bit of future that I think is going to complete me. And there's so little, even for those who are young, it's not much. How can I complete me in those few years? What can I possibly add to me to make me complete? It's an illusion. So to go beyond that absurdly limited sense of self to the vastness that you actually are, not as a limited me anymore. You simply then become an expression of that, and it emanates then through this form. And so this is the only way now the planet can be saved, is human consciousness to become transformed. Until recently, it's been a luxury, that transformation. A few here and there. And now we have to. This is why it's happening. And we encounter a state of consciousness that is beyond thought, characterized by deep, vitally alive stillness. And out of that, thought can still come. And those thoughts that come out of that are inspired thoughts, new thoughts, realizations. Thought is form. And this is the formless. Knowing yourself as the formless. And then move through the world of form and enjoy that. This is the first time. It's only when you know yourself to be beyond that, not through some idea, but through being in the surrendered state. It's only then that you can enjoy the world of forms, truly. When you are no longer in a personalized reactive relationship to the forms that arise in your life, in the now, of course, then you no longer desire nor fear any particular forms. You enjoy the dance of form. And you may contribute to it. You may create new forms. They come out of presence, not because egoic need to complete itself. So a completely different doing happens. Completely different motivation for doing. No self-seeking through doing, not trying to get to some future point where you're going to complete yourself, and if you don't get there, you'll be unhappy. And if you do get there, you'll also be unhappy. Of course, many of these things, they've been pointed to in ancient teachings. There's the Bhagavad Gita, a beautiful, one of the most beautiful signposts. The path of surrendered action, where this, the action, the doing, is not a means to an end. that is surrendered action. The doing is not inferior to some mentally projected result that you want to achieve and thereby enhance your sense of self. Surrendered action is never a means to an end. It is sufficient unto itself. So your practice is be watchful of this moment. It's always this moment. A limited way of putting it would be to say, what is your relationship with this moment? You don't have a relationship with this moment. You are this moment. But in a more limited perspective, you could ask yourself, what is my relationship with this moment or the form that this moment takes? Surrendered or resistant? And you watch. And as you watch, many times you can watch non-surrender arising. And then you watch non-surrender as a physical contraction, as an emotional movement, or as mental judgments. Often the three go together. Physical contraction, the emotion, and some mental judgment that says something about now, or a total projection away from now. And you see yourself in your favorite restaurant at home, having a meal there. And suddenly, say, you come back to, oh. If you observe yourself in a non-surrendered state, that's all that's necessary. And allow that to be. Physical contraction. Oh, look at that. Nothing personal in it. It's the human state. Allow it. So it's as whenever a no arises in you, a no to what is, and you suddenly see it, accept it. So the yes, you bring the yes into the no. Always. You cannot fight non-surrender through more non-surrender or trying to achieve a surrendered state. It's enough to know that you are not surrendered. That is the arising of presence. That is the arising of the unconditioned consciousness. And there you can allow. It allows that. Right. And then something happens to the non-surrendered state because it is not compatible with surrender. Of course, many teachings speak of surrender to God. And of course, this is what it is. You can only surrender to God by surrendering to the form that this moment takes. When you ask, well, God couldn't possibly have created this dreadful form that this moment takes, this situation, it's a limitation. I want to know myself as unlimited, And here I'm faced with limitation wherever I look. That's the form that this moment takes. The form that this moment takes cannot not be a limitation, even if it looks like great. After a little while, the great has become a limitation on you. Look at the West. It's become very wealthy and prosperous. And at first it means, I'm now unlimited. I can buy whatever I like. And then you buy more and more, and another visit to the shopping mall, and another visit, and another. And suddenly all the things that you've bought have become a limitation on you, and everything is suddenly, buying doesn't fulfill you anymore. And then you walk around the shopping mall depressed. So what if, in the world of form, what looks sometimes like, now this form has come and freed me, always turns out to be another limitation, because it is form, and all form is limitation. So to project some situation mentally where you are going to be free of all limitations is absurd. It is not in the nature of the world of form to be free of limitation. It would be a contradiction in terms. Form is limitation. So whatever, wherever you go, you encounter limitations. And every time you think, now this will free me, this person will make me happy, in other words, unlimited, then this very person that was supposed to make you happy will be the greatest limitation on your life. So it's not seeking where it cannot be found. So it's not by running away from the limitations, but by finding a new relationship towards the limitations. And that new relationship towards the limitations, not that you can't take action to improve things and paint your house or doesn't, no, but a new relationship towards the limitations in your life, from one of feeling bad about them and thinking you must get some, there must be some other situation that's better than this. Well, maybe try another one, and then the same arises again. Mm-hmm. Okay, try some other place, live somewhere else, and then after a while the same arises. Okay, well, now just say yes to this. The very limitation becomes an opening through the yes. That's the beauty of it. What before looked like a universe that was there to frustrate you, how could God allow this? The universe looks, if it was there, just designed to frustrate you. And that's how some people live, in such a reactive relationship. They're so angry that everything is just designed to make my life difficult. That's how it seems. And then your relationship changes towards what is. And you allow it. And there's the limitation, whatever it may be, big, small, discomfort, little discomfort here, a little cold there, or prison cell around you. Fairly big limitation, physical condition of the body limiting you, can't move anymore, can't move fast anymore, who knows. Sooner or later, limitations will come. Big ones will come too. Form, it's form. And so it's not resisted anymore. Then something opens up where there before was limitation, becomes an opening into the formless and the unlimited. It's, you've walked through the limitation by yes. This is the cross, the meaning of the cross. Crucifixion means limitation, at highest degree of limitation. Can't move anymore. Totally limited. And then surrender happens. In the face of the unacceptable. And suddenly the cross becomes a symbol of the divine. The torture instrument becomes a symbol of the divine. There, and there's deep wisdom, no matter, you don't have to be a Christian to see the wisdom that is embedded in that. Deepest, one of the deepest symbols of humanity, and in most churches they don't understand it at all. They don't understand the depth of it. They make it into some formal belief structures. But the depth of it is to see that the non-duality that is there of the divine and the world of form, of the limited and the unlimited. They are one. It's through the world of form that the divine is reached, by going through it, not running away from it. So, this is, to know this is our spiritual practice, to go deeper and deeper into this is our spiritual practice this week. Use, of course, there's great beauty here too, and there are limitations on you. Use them wisely in your practice. Use this moment wisely, rightly. It's precious. It's the only one there is, ever. We will meet again in the now. The hands of the clock will have shifted and show the 3:30 position, but it'll still be now. We may also have, as we go into this week, periods of silence. Thank you.